happy to see everybody, and I hope you guys are having an awesome day. Come on in and let me know if you can hear me. Give me a quick yes if you can hear me okay. I want to make sure I'm coming through all right. All right, so let's see here. And shout out the city you're from, by the way. I'd like to see what city you guys are from. Rochelle and Chelsea, good morning to you. Good morning. Let's see here. I see Austin, Texas from Henry Irving and Nalisha. I think I saw San Diego, because I whenever I see San Diego, I get jealous because y'all's weather is so nice. And I live in Chicago and it's like, Rochelle, New Orleans, love New Orleans. Speaking of New Orleans, you know, the great D1, who is an excellent businessman and educator and hip hop artist, he's doing kind of a private VIP conversation where you can pick his brain tonight on how he was able to make millions of dollars without a record deal. That is a highly relevant conversation for anybody that wants to make their money without selling out. It's not just for entertainers. It's for anybody that wants to understand how to be an independent businessman. D is a guy that I respect a lot because I've seen his journey, and he's had a hard time, but this man has literally transformed hip hop. He's made hip hop much more conscious by basically challenging rappers about the content they create and thinking about the damage that it does to the community, and how that overcommitment to simply doing anything that comes to mind just to make a couple dollars, how that's just harmful to the Black community. So we owe this young brother a debt of gratitude because he has worked so hard to do this, and the sacrifices were huge. I mean, he had to turn down a record deal from Lil Wayne's record label. He could have been rapping next to Drake and Nicki Minaj, but he chose not to do that. It takes a lot of character to do that. But the thing about it that's really cool about D, this is another thing I think you guys would like, is he shows that you don't have to sell out to make money. You don't have to sell out to make money. And also he showed that that because you didn't sell out don't mean you got to be broke. There ain't nothing righteous about being in poverty, and there's nothing about being in poverty that will make you righteous. And that's one of the things that I really want you to understand, just sort of as a financial consciousness starting point, is a lot of people think, has anybody ever seen this, where people automatically assume that if you're not on the struggle bus, you must have did something unethical, illegal, or dirty to get there. Like, oh, she must have slept her way to the top, or he must have sold out. The only reason he's doing good is because his mama has some money and all that, right? Where they you end up feeling, or people try to make you feel bad because you're doing okay. And what really, in my view, that comes down to is just the lack of economic understanding, you know, where people don't understand that you don't have to sell out to make money. And just because you sold, just because you are doing okay, that doesn't mean you have to, that you had to do all these stupid things to get there, right? People do stupid things to get money, but they don't know how to make it. That's what happens. People do, and I'm not making fun of anybody. I promise you I'm not, because I have to be careful. I'm a finance professor, so things that may seem simple to me might be a little more complex to most, and I'm still learning how to remember that. But one thing I'll tell you is I remember when I talked to a young brother on the south side of Chicago who was a former gang member. He said, Dr. Boyce, man, me and my boys listen to a lot of the stuff you talk about. And I said, really? Okay, so tell me why. What drives you to do that? He said, man, because, you know, he said, when you're never taught how to make money the right way, you just do stupid stuff to get it because everybody wants it, but nobody learns it. We don't teach our kids how to get it. So they get out here and they do crazy stuff to get money. So anyway, D1 is a great guy to me because this man has literally been a powerhouse in hip hop. Like, he literally became one of the biggest rappers out here now. Like, and he did it on his own. He didn't get any record play or airplay. It's not because his music's not great. He's rapped with some of the best artists out here. He's friends with the top artists from Kendrick Lamar across the board. But he came along, unfortunately, in an era where they said, you know, if it's not toxic, then it's not going to work on the radio. Or you're not rapping about, you know, how many women you have and how much money you burned at the club and all, or killing somebody. So that doesn't quite fit. But what D did was, because he understood money, and we would talk about money. We've been having financial consciousness conversations for about 10 years. He and I have been talking for about 10 years. I didn't even know I was his mentor until he mentioned it one day during an interview. And we talk about business. We don't talk about how to make great music. he can do that. I know he can do that. He's made tons of videos and put out albums, and people love his albums and all that. We talk about things like marketing and distribution and monetization and all those business side things. Like I talked to him in a way that the record label would be speaking, except I'm not his record label. I'm just, you know, one of his friends. And he's been able to carve out amazing niches within the Christian community, within the financial literacy community. He did a song called Sally Maybach that became a massive, massive hit, millions of listens, independent. And he got a deal with Sally May to go to high schools and talk to them about paying back student loans, right? So anyway, long story short, Dee's going to actually come into the Black Business School. And this is what the Black Business School was built for. It was built for people that are able to understand the power of economics without being hypnotized by it, right? We're able to understand how money can give you control, but money should not control you. We're not into the whole capitalist, pure capitalism thing, because if that's the case, then yeah, there's other ways you can make more money, quick money. If you wanna make quick money, just learn how to twerk like Megan, or learn how to bust a rap, or tell a joke, or dribble a basketball, or throw a football, and there's gonna be plenty of money for you. White people have always paid Black people lots of money to be good entertainers. That will never stop. That's always been true. They've always also been willing to pay you if you're willing to kind of let go of your core values or abandon your community. And so what makes D1 special is that he's one of those guys that was able to do well while still really standing on his purpose, right? And being very purpose-driven and living a truly purpose-driven life. And that pun was intended. And so anyway, D is coming into the Black Business School as a guest lecturer tonight. It's going to be tonight, which is Friday, the 26th of April. And it's going to be, I think, 8 o'clock tonight. And you can pick his brain, ask him questions, stuff like that. I'm going to put the link in the chat. And if you can't see the link, all you have to do is make sure you're on the text list. Text the word morning to 87948. Text morning to 87948. I'll send you an invitation. There is a small fee. We got to pay the brother for his time. But you can record it. You can have the recording. It's yours for life. And I guarantee you that you'll get some insights from him that you won't get in a business school. And that, because it's very rare. In fact, there's no business school out here that can teach a Black person how to succeed economically as a Black person, right? Most business schools, and believe me, I've taught at a lot of them. I taught at the University of Kentucky, Indiana University, Syracuse University, Ohio State. Most business schools can only teach a Black person how to be successful as a white person with Black skin, if that makes any sense, right? Does that make sense? Okay. So I'll put the link in the chat in a second. Give me 1 second. You triggered me when I saw New Orleans. I was like, oh, that's D1. Let me just bring that up, because I'm thinking about that, and it was on my brain this morning when I went to the gym. And by the way, you know, I know I mentioned to you guys that my wife has got me getting up at this ungodly hour, 5 a.m. to go to the gym in the morning. Let me just tell you, if you ever really want to change your life for the better, try something like that. Try getting up super early and exercising in the morning. And even though it can be hard, and you'll like, by the way, there's the link, it's in the chat. You'll be dragging, you know, a little bit. Like you really have to pinch yourself in the butt to get yourself out of bed. It really gets you going. Like your brain will be on 10. You eat the right food. I saw something one day, and this is kind of more in the health is wealth category. Again, in case y'all don't know, in case you're new to financial consciousness training, it's literally me doing almost like a stream of consciousness on economic concepts and how our economics flows into our daily life, right? So this is more of a health in the health is wealth category. But I saw this video. And I put it on, I don't know if I put it on my Instagram or not, but I put a lot of stuff on my Instagram. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's Dr. Boyce Finance. And I have a backup at Dr. Boyce Money, because you guys know I had like almost 600,000 followers. And one day they just deleted my page, and I have no idea why. I think I probably shared something from Malcolm X or something that offended them. I have no idea. But anyway, they showed this rat, right? And they threw the rat in the water. And he was swimming around, and he had to find his way to safety. He had to find his way to this little island to become safe and then be able to get out of the water. Well, when the rat was eating healthy food, he found his way to safety like really fast. But then what they did was they gave him like the equivalent of an American diet. They gave him like all this like salty, fatty, processed food, and they put him on that diet. And then they did the same thing where they threw him in the water. And it took him like probably about five times longer to find his way back to safety. It took him five times longer to solve the problem. So literally his brain wasn't working in the way it was supposed to work. And as I get older, I start seeing all these studies that link a lot of things like, your sugar intake to dementia and cancer and all this other stuff. So I'm not telling anybody what to do, but I am telling you that you may want to research that on your own. A lot of you are already hip to it. In fact, a lot of you are probably so hip to it that you could lecture me on this topic. So do not think I'm an expert. And be patient with me. God is not through with me yet. And if I say something ignorant, then forgive me for I know not what I do. I'm just doing my best. I'm trying to get better like the rest of us. But I can really tell you that health and wealth are deeply related because if you give up your health pursuing your wealth, then what's going to happen is you're going to lose all of your wealth trying to get your health back. The big pharma will eat through all your money. They will make you go broke. Now, actually, speaking of that, I did buy shares of a company that is selling those weight loss drugs. I heard my wife and I were talking, and she was explaining how she works. Well, she does work at my wife's a therapist, coaching with Dr. Alicia. She does a lot of therapy with families and couples and individuals. So if you want to heal, which I think everybody should want to heal, feel free to go to our website. It's coachingwithdralicia.com. But anyway, she was telling me that a lot of the people that she's working with at a hospice place, they were talking about all these patients that are coming in that are taking these weight loss drugs, right? I forgot what the big Ozempic, I think that's the big one. And I was kind of like, I was like, I don't really want to, I don't like drugs if I don't have to take them, right? I try to take drugs only if I have to. But I've been hearing that a lot. Like everybody's just looking toward these drugs. And if you remember, Oprah Winfrey actually said that she was gonna leave the board of Weight Watchers because she started taking the Ozempic drug instead of actually just, doing it the old school way of like working out or whatever. And so, anyway, the company that I bought shares in is a company that makes these drugs. And the company is called Viking Therapeutics, and the ticker symbol is VKTX, VKTX. Not telling you to invest in this. This is not investing advice. This is just me. Just letting you know what I'm doing, letting you know what I'm doing with my family's money. So feel free to take a look. It's up to you. It's no judgment, no rush, no nothing. Just me sharing information. Okay, so I hope that that helps you in your investing journey. And also, I think as we talk into jump into another topic, I wanted to hit. I really want to hit this a topic related to the NFL draft. And it's sensitive, but I really want to hit this. But before I do that, too, I want to mention another thought that I had in terms of economic consciousness that I wanted to share was I really, really, really have been thinking a lot this month about the false assumption that we have that everybody has to go to work. I go back to that quote. Does anybody remember when I gave that quote from Rockefeller, where Rockefeller said, "If you spend all your time at work, how do you have time to make any money?" Did I ever tell you about that? Do y'all remember that quote? Let me know if you remember that, where he said, "If you're at work all day, how do you have time to make money?" And that's a really surprising, that would be a surprising quote for a lot of people, because why do they go to work? Well, they go to work because they want to make money, right? And so what I think he's saying is that for many Americans, a lot of us, I think we have the wrong hustle. I think that we're hustling and we're working hard and we're doing our best, but I think a lot of us just have the wrong hustle. And I think that our children inherit the wrong hustle from parents who just did what we were told, what we were taught. And so I'm gonna tell you, I sat last night with some of our prime students. We do these little private sessions, there was like four or five of us in there. And you'd be amazed. Like I said something kind of, I got a little cocky today on Twitter. I just had, because I was really thinking this, and this is like, oh my God, this is so crazy. I said, if you just have like literally just $60,000 to invest in stock options, I can show you how to quit your job in 30 minutes. And some of you have seen me do that. And really 30 minutes is an exaggeration. I could probably do it in more like 5, maybe 10, depending on how up to speed you are on exactly what the process is. And Like I sat down with that mother when we were at the stock option summit, and I was talking to a mom who has a 4-year-old son, and we were talking about, the future of her son, and I said, she said, I'm gonna invest in him for him. Like in a way, kind of like doing what I do, I become kind of like a financial priest. You know when people get around the priest, they start talking about, well, hey, Pastor Wilson, I'm gonna be in church on Sunday, or I know I missed the last 3 weeks, but I'll be back next. Like you kind of feel like you have to start talking about Jesus or God or something, right? So anyway, so a lot of times people will start talking about what they're doing with investing, right? Because they're like, I'm talking to Dr. Boyce, so I gotta be like, more prim and proper. But if they really knew me, they would not. You don't, if you ever see me, don't put on no facade for me. I ain't worth all that. But anyway, so she was saying, talking about how she was investing for her son. So I told her about our $5 a day plan, right? And I was explaining, which again, and by the way, I know some of you know about it, but I have to repeat it because there are new people that are coming in every day. And also, I believe repetition is a great way to drill things into our subconscious and drill things into our habits and drill things into our culture. So it's on blackwealthmasterplan.com. That's blackwealthmasterplan.com, and it's free. And I explained, I said, yeah, okay, so if you do $5 a day for your kid, then by the time they're 10, they have roughly 29,000 liquid, based on the history of the stock market. By the time they're 20, they have 100,000. By the time they're 30, they have close to a quarter million, et cetera. And it doesn't seem that way, but the stock market has this magical way of growing. It's like planting seeds in your backyard, and you're amazed that you got these big tomatoes, but you've been planting seeds, you've been watering them consistently, so something is going to grow. All right. And then I said, and then I think she told me she was going to get a car. And I said, well, what would you spend on a car note? She said $600. I said, okay, well, if you, instead of doing $5 a day, which is 150 a month, if you just 600 a month, because I think I asked her a stupid question, like, well, you love your son as much as you love your car, right? And she said, oh, more than I love my car, more than I love my car. I said, okay, great. So how about if you did a matching plan where, for every dollar you put toward the car dealer, you also put a dollar toward your son. So you put $600 toward the Mercedes you want to get, and then you put $600 a month toward this investment fund for your child. This is the to me, this is a freedom fund. This is a freedom fund because if you do what I tell you, your son will never have to work for anybody. He'll never come home complaining about how bad massa is treating him. He'll never experience all the financial anxiety and trauma that so many of us experience by going to work every day. Because the number one trauma source for Black people, in case you don't know, I don't think it's police shootings. Most of you don't see cops every single day. It's not, some of this other stuff that's out here. It's getting up and going to work every day, because that's the one thing you do every day that just pisses you off, right? Don't get me wrong. You meet the wrong cop, you meet a Mark Furman on the street, and you just, you're in a bad situation. Maybe you might get a bullet or something. That's a possibility. That happens. It's real, et cetera. But I don't know as many Black people who've been shot by the cops as I know Black people who hate their boss and hate their job, right? I don't know as many Black people who've been, in horrible arrest situations, have been beaten upside the head with a billy club, as I do Black people who have went to school, busted their butts, worked hard for 20 or 30 years, and did everything right, and still didn't get the promotion, or sat there and watched a white person get something that they deserve, right? So it's very stressful, very frustrating. It angers us, right? There's a really angry Black, like middle class and working class, as a result of this unspoken, unaddressed racism. So here's the deal. I said, look, so the Freedom Fund for your kid, you put 600 a month in, which is four times that amount. That means after 10 years, instead of 29,000, he has roughly over about 120. After 20 years, instead of 100,000, you got 400,000. 30 years, instead of a quarter million, you got close to a million. But give or take a few thousand, right? The numbers are not precise. You cannot predict what the stock market is going to do, so there are no guarantees. However, history shows that a parent who has done this for their child is going to have a child that's going to have plenty of money. So now your child is close to 30, and he's now, guess what? Pay attention now. Look at what's changed in his life. Look at how many Black men, think about how many men you know or that you've seen that were 28, 29 years old and did not get married. Why? Well, why? Well, give me a reason why a lot of men won't get married. I mean, I know people say because they're scared. No. A lot of men won't get married because they don't have enough what? They don't feel what? Financially secure. They don't have enough money. They don't feel this. I haven't made it. I'm still trying to get my record deal, and one day I'm gonna be, I'm gonna make it. One day I'm gonna get into the league. I'm playing, but seriously, or just maybe I'm not satisfied with the job I have, or whatever, right? So I don't have enough savings, and I'm trying to take care of myself. How can I take care of two or three other people? Well, your son doesn't go through that. Your son is 28. He's got at least half a million to $1 million liquid in the bank account. And he also is financially literate because his mom 25 years ago used to work with this guy named Dr. Boyce Watkins, who got him, who convinced her to get her son educated on economics at an early age, right? So he's in a different league. He's not, you know, he's not doing oppression talk. He's literally talking about companies he wants to acquire and the next vacation he's going to go on. That becomes his life. And I said, so here's what I did. I showed her, I said, look, you know, if your son went in and bought 1,000 shares of Coinbase stock, some of y'all see me do this magic trick. It's so cool. I said, if he bought 1,000 shares of Coinbase stock, he could sell options on those that Coinbase stock. And I pulled it out and I showed her. It wasn't theoretical. It wasn't like hocus pocus, like one day this will happen if you believe enough. No, it's like literally on the market right now, he can sell those stock options for it. I said, do you see it right there? I said, what's that number? She said, $7.20. I said, okay. So if he has 1,000 shares, would cost about less than $250,000, which is, you can't even buy a house for $250,000. The average house in America costs $300,000. And he doesn't have to put up all the money. He could put up half the money. And he could sell these options, 1,000 of them, for $7.20 a piece. So let's look at that. 1,000 times 720, how much is that? And I pulled the number up on the screen. She said $7,346. I said, that's how much your son makes every week. Without doing any work, right? $7,300 and something per week. So I said, look at that over the course of a year. That's about $360,000 per year, give or take. He's not even using all his capital. If he used all his capital, he could probably double that. He can make $500,000 a year. Now I said, now think about this. Think about this in terms of a freedom plan. I don't like complaining about problems. I like solving them. I do. I'm a mathematician. We solve problems. We don't just whine about them. I like a plan that can be executed, that's concrete, that's real, not hocus pocus, not, you know, fairy tale, you know, kumbaya, Black Lives Matter. I want to know what's the plan. So think about this. So now I've just explained to you how if you do what you got to do right now, if mama truly loves her son as much as she loves that car, which I know that she does, and she executes on this plan, her son is making the same amount of money as most surgeons. And he wouldn't even have to have a college degree. And he doesn't have to do any work to get this money. What I just showed you, I did it in 5 minutes. I didn't have to go to school for 12 years to do this. Surgeons go to school a long time, by the way. A lot of surgeons I know don't get out of school till they're 35. And then that's when the hard work really begins. And then you get to live this nice life. This is the BS that they've taught you. Do you understand? Does anybody understand how big of a breakthrough this is? It's not a complex idea. It's not like I'm the first one to see this. I think rich people have seen this a very long time. But I bet you that I'm one of the first people to bring this to you and break it down like that. And I remember she was just astonished. She was kind of blown away, like, oh my God, I didn't know this was possible. I'm like, yeah, a lot of people don't. So my point is to say, yeah, I was like, you know, I got kind of cocky. I was on Twitter. I was on the treadmill feeling good, listening to music. And I said, you know, if you have just $60,000 to invest, I can show you how to quit your job in 30 minutes. Right. And so here's the point. Look, there's ways to make money without doing stupid stuff. There's stuff out here. There's options that many of us never saw as kids. And these are things that I believe, should be pursued, because the crowded pathways that we're told to pursue as Black people are just wrong, and they're painful, and they don't pay off. I've even evolved beyond where I was even 7 or 8 years ago, where I was really, really big into just starting Black-owned businesses. I still believe we should have Black-owned businesses, but 80% of Black-owned businesses fail. But the stuff that we do in the Prime program, that's real. That's like, we did stuff in the Stock Options Summit, and I said, I'll show you exactly how to make money on Monday. And a lot of you were making money on Monday. You know, so I think keep looking for the solutions. They are out there. If you want to join us in the Prime program, take a look at drboyceprime.com. It's the best. I think it'll be the best investment you ever made. Definitely better than anything you ever learned in college. That much I can guarantee. All right. And so anyway, that was my other thought that I had. Now, here's what I want to get to now. I was thinking about this slave auction called the NFL draft, and I call it the slave auction, and let me explain why. And I know a lot of people don't believe me, don't get it, and I don't blame you, because these NFL athletes are very rich. They're going to make insane amounts of money. And that's not to be denied. Most of them are. At least most of them are going to make a lot more money than the average person. So of course, you would say, well, how in the hell can you call somebody a slave when they're making $2 or $3 million a year? So I'm gonna ask y'all a simple question. Does being a slave mean that you are working for free? Yes or no? What is slavery? What does it mean to be a slave? Let's look at the definition. Let's see here. It's a condition in which one human being is being owned by another. Okay, so I would say that if you talk about slavery in terms of one person owning another, that's obviously what our people went through, right? And I don't think that it would be fair to compare any other form of servitude to what we went through. I think that what the slavery we went through was especially brutal. It was horribly traumatic. And I would never in a million years say that an NFL player is in a worse condition than a slave in 1704. That would be ridiculous to say. But I believe slavery is on a continuum. I believe slavery comes from a lack of freedom, a lack of ability to do what you want to do. And also, I think that there's some interesting similarities with the NFL draft. I heard Minister Farrakhan allude to this, and I agree with him. And so if you look at the NFL draft, slaves, sorry, the players are evaluated based on their physical attributes, right? They say, okay, look at how high he can jump. Look at how strong that Negro is. Look at how fast he can run, right? And so with slave auctions, same thing. They will put him up on a big block and look at how strong they were and look at how tall they were and what their age were. Look at their teeth and stuff like that, and then come up with a conclusion like, okay, this Negro I'll pay this amount for. But this one I'll only pay that amount for because they're a little fatter or a little older or a little whatever, right? And so the NFL draft is interesting because not only are the assets, and remember, all these players are seen as assets. They are financial assets similar to slavery. You have owners just like you did in slavery. Most of those owners are white. Actually, all the NFL majority owners are white. I don't think there's not a black majority owner in the NFL, right? All the owners are white. Most of the great athletes are black, even though you have some whites in there as well, right? So it's not just a black white thing. It's just we tend to dominate on the athletic side. They dominate on the business ownership and economic side. And then also, if you know the life of an NFL athlete, it is one in which the owner that purchases the rights to you pretty much feels like he has control over your life. I don't know if anybody in here has played in the NFL or has had a sibling or spouse in the NFL. I remember talking to a student in the Black Business School who told me that her husband got drafted to the NFL. And it was when she was in college. She's a real pretty lady. And he left, he was good enough where he left college in his junior year to go play for the Seahawks. And like most NFL players, though, his career was very short. NFL players do not have long careers. The average NFL career is about 2 2.5 years. So he was, and his was even shorter than that. I think he played for about a year. And then, did you say my brother, Junior Seau? Junior Seau, is Junior Seau your brother? Tell me, did somebody say that Junior Seau is their brother? First of all, Junior Seau was a bad boy. That was a great athlete. Oh my goodness. Whoa, okay. Well then all right. Well, first of all, my condolences because I heard how the story ended. And that actually takes us to our next point. But then at the same time, that's pretty awesome because he was a great player. But at the same time, thank you for mentioning that. There's that other point that I didn't get to yet, which is the significant health consequences that occur as a result of making that sacrifice of being an NFL player. So let me tell you, I'll tell you two separate stories. First of all, this I'm still kind of stunned that sibling of Junior Seau's here, but yeah, again, much respect to you and your family. So this woman that married the NFL player, I remember she told me that she said, well, he got drafted and we moved to Seattle. I said, well, what was that like? She said, I hated it. I said, why did you hate it? She said, because they controlled every single ounce of his life. We couldn't, it seemed like we couldn't do anything. We never had time to do anything together. They control where we were allowed, what were we allowed to live and what we were able to do. And if they wanted us to jump, we had to say how high, because that was the only job that he could get in the NFL, because it wasn't like he could say, well, I'm mad, I'm gonna go play for the Cowboys. You couldn't really, you had to get traded, right? Traded like an asset. You can't just go for, you can't just do like an employee at Google that says, I'm gonna go work for Microsoft. You can do that. In the NFL, they have the rights to a monopoly, which allows them to control and restrain the supply and the cost of labor. And that sort of monopoly, or maybe it would be actually an oligopoly, or cartel. Cartel would be the better term to use. In a cartel, cartels are illegal in every other industry in America. Did y'all know that? The only couple of areas, there are just a few areas where cartels are allowed, and a couple are the NFL and the NCAA, right? And so effectively, imagine if you worked at Google and you say, you know, I think I want to leave, I'm going to work for Apple. And imagine if Apple and Google were colluding and Apple just agreed that they will never hire anybody from Google, Google will never hire anybody from Apple, and that they're all going to keep your salary at a certain price. That's sort of what the NFL is allowed to do, right? So anyway, she said that in the first season he got injured. Once he got injured, they put him on the sidelines. I think they cut him from the team. And so, like a lot of young guys who dedicate their entire lives to sports, because I think athletic ability is a gift and a curse to the black man. It's a gift because it's allowed a very small percentage of us to achieve the highest heights and rise to the highest levels of society. But it's a curse because it's such a valuable lottery ticket that you have millions of little boys that bet everything on that lottery ticket. They invest every nickel into that, every ounce of energy into that. They invest their soul into this dream of becoming an NFL or NBA player, and 99.9% of them never make a penny playing sports, right? So what this does is it creates this massive waste product, if you will. Not that these are wa not that these human beings are a waste, but when I talk about a waste product, I'm talking about just a lot of young men who did not develop their skills in other areas. They became great at basketball or football, but they did not become great at reading. They did not become great at writing. They did not become great at math. They did not become great at entrepreneurship or other ways of making money. And then also, in some cases, like in the case of this woman's husband, he developed a lot of other bad habits that come with sports slash hip hop culture. And one of the things that we don't confront enough in the black community is the toxic side of sports and hip hop culture. And what do I mean by that? Well, the other day I saw Terrell Owens, not Terrell, I'm sorry, Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharpe and Gilbert Arenas, three extraordinary former professional athletes who were commenting on why Amanda Seales is not married. Now, I'm not a big fan of Amanda Seales, and I can understand why I don't think I'd marry her. But I thought it was really interesting because Gilbert Arenas says, well, I know she's not married because a man wouldn't want to deal with blah, 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 blah. And she's got all this education and nobody else can be at that same level and blah, 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 blah. Right. And I was laughing because I said, this is so interesting because, well, first of all, I agree. That's a great question. Like, why is it their business? But or their concern. But then also I thought about, I see, I'm a black man, too. And I follow stuff that black men follow. I follow sports. I know how great of a shooter Gilbert Arenas was. He was an amazing athlete. But I also know that Gilbert Arenas was a buffoon who got kicked off the team, from what I understand, was something involving bringing a gun to the locker room. Just ignorant thug goofball behavior, right? Chad Ochocinco and Shannon Sharpe, I saw their great careers, but I also remember seeing Chad Ochocinco on an Instagram Live with Terrell Owens, where I could have sworn Terrell said something like, "Yeah, remember that time we were in the Bahamas and we had sex with 15 women in one day? It was something extreme like that, like a bunch of." And I said, "You have sex with that many women, you're gonna catch all the diseases, like." That's crazy. Like, are you even thinking about your health? Like, are you just, again, or are you caught up in this toxic culture? The toxic culture is sleep with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women, which is gonna make you sick. And then you're going to pass diseases to people. And people don't see any of that because they're just thinking about how, he's tall and he's handsome and he's rich and he's famous and he's got a great body. But if 3,000 women have been connected to that body, you might want to go get, go check with the CDC. Like that. And again, we talked about how health is wealth. And I don't know if being with the man of your dreams is worth a bad AIDS test. I just don't. I don't. Again, it's your decision. It's someone else's choice. And I hate to be the jerk to bring that up, but I think that I find it fascinating that we don't address that, right? Or then so when I talk about the culture, here's what I'm talking about, right? Because there's an overlap. There's always been an overlap. Remember, we talk about how economics is culture. Economics is culture. And when you have a and part of the reason the black economics has not gotten to where it needs to get to is because we have not addressed formally that which is required to develop the infrastructure for a culture that is going to be economically strong. We have not addressed that. And I have to unfortunately make people uncomfortable or even make enemies by pointing out what I think is the obvious. Because I think this is important, I really do. So in order to make my point here, let's finish. So with those three guys, all speaking about Amanda Seales and her marital status, I just started thinking, I know you guys, I've watched you for 15, 20 years. Not one of you is marriage material. And a lot of the reason you're not marriage material is because I don't know how much you can be marriage material when you've slept with, hundreds of women and you've kind of like lived this lifestyle where the world has spoiled you in a certain way. A lot of athletes, not all of them, again, those who are spiritually and culturally grounded do not fit the description. I'm not talking about so let's say a young man who has a really strong father who gives him solid core values, he doesn't count. I'm not talking about a young man who is connected to something spiritual like the church even, or just something in terms of good common sense where he doesn't get caught up in the nonsense. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where you have something about African American slave culture that connects to the whole buck slave thing where we had the breeding farms where the big bucks would just have sex with women all day long, right? And then you have no boundaries maybe because you came from a broken home and maybe the value systems weren't structured and they were kind of distorted to the point where all that matters are like material things, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like we have an element of the culture, you see it a lot in sports and hip hop, where it's all about the booty and the bling and the fame and the followers and the likes and the shares and the popularity, right? Where then what happens, I believe out of that culture comes a bunch of 45, 50-year-old teenagers. You get these Peter Pan types of men that just never grow up. Do you understand? Let me know if if you can see what I'm seeing here. They're 45 years old and you literally are on the internet talking like you're 12. You sound like I hear 20-year-olds talking. I'm like, wow, you sound just like the 20-year-olds. You should probably be talking to Kai Cenat. Kai Cenat's 21, 22 years old. You sound just like him. And it sucks because you got a gray beard and you're trying to stay young, but you're really getting old, but you don't see that, right? And so what I think is that sometimes because of these sort of cultural challenges and broken families and everything else, we don't have we don't have enough men, we don't have enough just grown men in the community who kind of say, yeah, all that running around and stuff, that was okay when I was 25, but now I'm trying to be smart, responsible, or here's another thing too, and pay attention now. And again, this all links back to the economics, so don't think I'm going away from economics, but we have to talk about culture to talk about economics. So I was explaining to my wife, and because we were talking about, we were eating breakfast today, and I said, you educated me a lot on trauma. My wife is a specialist on trauma, and she educated me on how trauma affects you in so many ways. Like trauma just really tears into the core of your soul. It'll disrupt your relationships. People, heavily traumatized people die younger. They have a harder time maintaining relationships. They have a hard time managing money. They're more likely to get addicted to drugs and alcohol because you have all this pain that you've never addressed, because we don't heal our pain. We just walk around as these strong black men and strong black women. And what happens, though, is that you then self-medicate, right? So when I would see like a Gilbert Arenas, I see a guy who probably could tell me some trauma stories from his childhood, who never really fully medicated, but the world has treated him special and spoiled him because he's 6'9" and he can dribble a basketball and he's a good looking man. And so he's self, you know, I wonder how much I know that when I would hang around with athletes, I would see a lot of them self-medicating through maybe smoking weed, hitting the liquor bottle, going to the strip club. How often do we see that? That, you know, rappers that will literally go, or athletes that will literally go and do something outrageously, almost like mentally ill, like I just threw $50,000 up in at the strip club. Like, why would you do that? Why would you throw your generational wealth into a stripper thong? What grown man even thinks that this makes any sense? What man with children would ever say that it makes sense that I went to the club and spent $50,000 on liquor, another $50,000 on hoes, and I'm very proud, and then I'm gonna go brag about it to 30 million people on the internet who think that I'm a wonderful person because white people put me on TV. And it's unfortunate and it's sad because these three 40 something, almost 50 year old men are sitting on here, and I'm not talking about Shannon Sharp. I think Shannon Sharp actually has some Southern values that make him a little more stable than some of the other guys. But I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, wow, all these young men are watching you, and I don't know how much actual manhood they're getting from this discussion because it's lacking balance, right? And so here's what happens, right? So with that one woman I told you who married the athlete, he plays for the Seahawks for half a season. He thinks he's going to be an NFL all-star. That does not occur. He gets injured. He's thinking he's going to make a comeback at any time. By this time, he's done everything he could to get back on the field. That's not quite working. So he forms an addiction to painkillers. Pay attention now. He's sitting at home. He becomes depressed. Why are you depressed? Well, you're depressed because you shaped your whole identity around football. All you know is football. The only thing you're good at is football. You're not you're not distracted by computer programming or mathematics or writing articles, you know, because you never learned these things. All you learned how to do was catch a football in front of a stadium full of white people, right? This is how you were going to make all your money. So now not only has a part of you died, but all your dreams have died. See, you're like a stock that is crashing, because when a stock crashes, let me tell you what happens when a stock crashes. A lot of stocks crash because they're what you call long duration assets. And what a lot of long duration assets are assets where they're not just built on how much money they've made to this point, they're built on money they're expecting to make in the future. So what happens is that with a long duration asset is when they get bad news, when bad news hits a stock like that, the stock crashes more than other stocks because literally this whole illusion, this whole vision you built for the future for this company just ceases to exist. So basically for this young athlete, losing sports wasn't just losing his paycheck. That was important because now, pay attention, his wife thought she was going to be living this luxurious lifestyle, but she's working two jobs to pay all the bills. Well, why? Well, because he's sitting at home waiting by the phone because he's thinking that the NFL is going to call him back at any moment. How did you end up in a situation where when that white man does not call, you can no longer take care of your spouse? That's the first question. So they got you into a trap. You fell for the banana in the tailpipe. You got hoodwinked. You got bamboozled. Now you're stuck, right? But then also his identity's gone. Because all he sees himself as is a football player. That's depressing as hell, right? And then thirdly, all these dreams you had, everything you thought you'd be doing in your 20s and 30s and your Hall of Fame speech you thought you'd be giving when you were 40 years old, ain't none of that happening now. So, and you've never been challenged, because we don't really challenge the athletes as much, right? We don't. I mean, I remember in high school and college, I remember the athletes getting preferential treatment. I remember being at college at University of Kentucky, and the rumor around campus was that Antoine Walker could not read, and not one single professor or administrator or coach felt compelled to force Antoine to learn to read because they said he's going to the NBA one day. Well, Antoine goes to the NBA and blows $110 million of generational wealth, which would have been $1 billion by now if he'd managed it appropriately. Now, with that being said, though, so this is what this man's going through. So he's depressed. He's depressed. I'm trying to draw the picture for you so you can really see the process based on, and again, this is just, you know, these are just the words of Boyce Watkins, right? If I get something wrong or you don't agree with something, that's okay, because I don't understand it all. I'm trying to understand it. So he's depressed. Well, so you're depressed. You're sitting at home all day. You're addicted to painkillers. Now you've got all this idle time. He's lost his purpose. There's nothing more dangerous than a person who has no purpose. When a person has no purpose, when I talked to a 23-year-old on the phone the other day, he was asking me for advice on how to get his life to the next level. I said, you got to find your purpose. I said, when a man does not have his purpose, especially if he's traumatized, right? And this is, goes back to what I was talking about with some of the athlete culture. I believe that a traumatized person who's in a lot of pain, who's lost a sense of purpose, is going to self-medicate a lot, right? So how many times have you ever seen a man who was unemployed or struggling, who pretty much sat at home, engaged in pleasure-seeking behavior? That's, you know, especially some tall, good looking man, you know, who ain't got nothing to do. What's he going to do? He's going to have about eight girlfriends. He's always looking for sex. Hey, man, you got some of that weed. He's got the liquor bottle near the bed. Right. Well, I mean, why not? I mean, if you don't have anything else to do, why not enjoy yourself? Why not do things that are pleasurable? Maybe I play some video games, but I can't talk because I like video games, but I don't do them all day, you know, but it's fun. So nothing against people who smoke or drink or anything. I'm not judging that. But what I'm talking about is doing those things in excess. All of us have seen that. All of us have seen the disgraced former superstar athlete who now sits around telling stories about how great he used to be while he's holding a brown paper bag with something in it. At least I've seen it a lot. From where I come from in Louisville, Kentucky, we had a lot of great athletes down there. And so let's move on. So what happens then is that she said that he also starts to get frustrated with her because he's feeling emasculated. She's making all the money. She's getting mad. So she's like, you know, you got to do something. You got to get a job. You got to bring some money in. So they're fighting. He starts to beat her up. Well, why does that happen? Well, because he's depressed. He's self-medicating all day, and he probably, did I mention that NFL players sometimes get CTE? No, wait, let me say it again. They don't sometimes get it, they always get it. Did you know that they literally said that kids start getting the brain damage when they're playing football at the age of like 9? Did you know that? They literally said that by the time they're in high school, they've already got it. And it's only by the grace of God that the damage isn't deep enough that it damages the prefrontal cortex enough to kill your impulse control. So what does that mean? Well, think about it. Remember Aaron Hernandez, who played for the New England Patriots? And people, he would go in the club, something would happen, somebody ends up getting killed, and they would say, of course it wasn't Aaron. Like, why would he kill a man when he just won a Super Bowl? Who would do that? That makes no sense. Why would OJ, let's say OJ did it. Some people say he didn't. Maybe his son did. Whatever. Let's pretend like he did. Let's say look at the possibility. Or better yet, scratch that. Here we go. OJ may not have killed his wife, but we know sure as hell no OJ hit her at least a couple times. Can we at least agree on that? Give me a yes if we can at least all agree that OJ did something to terrorize that lady because she's calling 911. He's in the back. Right? The police was there. We came by. He had a baseball bat. So we know something went down. Well, how did that happen, right? So pay attention now. I want y'all to follow me. Follow my logic here, okay? So OJ, one cop says, OJ, I come up to him. He's got a baseball bat, and he's screaming. He's yelling. He's barking. She's over there crying. And I said, OJ, put the bat down. And then OJ doesn't. He's barking and screaming, and she's still crying. He says, and he pulls out his billy club. He says, OJ, put the bat down now. And he says, then suddenly OJ just snaps out of it. He said he just snapped out of it. He's like, oh. I'm sorry, officer. You know, I apologize. Blah, 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 right? And a few people said that he would just snap out of it, right? Well, think about how many hits to the head OJ took playing all those years of football. And think about this, right? When people say, well, why would somebody who has it go, who has everything going for him, why would he go off and kill somebody or whatever, right? Like Aaron Hernandez, why would a guy who won the Super Bowl kill somebody? Well, obviously, it's got to be something related to brain damage. That's the solution. That's the logical solution to me. Something's wrong with his head. That's why what seems normal to you and I may not seem normal to him. And so every time, I see an athlete that gets involved in some sort of domestic violence or any kind of violence, I always think about CTE because when you get hit right here, it takes away that part of your brain. Everybody in here has had a time where you were like, okay, I really would like to smack that lady or that man, that dude. If he makes me mad again, I'm gonna kick him square in his nuts, right? Like all of us have felt that way, right? But you don't do it. Well, there has to be a mechanism in your head that stops you from doing that. And for some of these athletes, they lose that. And then that's why, and think about it, you're already in a violent sport, right? So it's very easy to go back to what you're good at, which is just hitting people, right? So again, so with that being said, that the violence starts and she get divorces him, a couple years later, and the story ends tragically. But my point is to say that when you're talking about the NFL, it's not a great experience, I think. I mean, if you look at the price that is paid for admission, if you look at the price that is paid when things go wrong, how many players die young, the amount of control that the owners have over the players, the way the league evaluates them, the way they just even LeBron, I think even LeBron compared the NFL to a big plantation, which is pretty much what it is. I would say that I think black boys are more harmed by sports than helped by sports. I think that what it does to our culture hurts us more than it helps us. And when I say this, I know how many men I'm gonna piss off when I say this. I have a lot of guy friends, and I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because I like sports. I like to watch football and basketball. I like all the sports. I played all the sports. I was a pretty good athlete, by the way. I was, I told and I never bragged to y'all about how I literally out sprinted every single guy on the football team. They all came out to try to run track. I was captain of the track team, and we had to race to get on the relay team. Well, I blew them suckers out. They couldn't keep up with me. So anyway, but so I was a pretty good athlete, right? Yeah, I could kind of jump and run, and I was kind of strong. And so I love sports, but when I look at it and I say, man, like, okay, what has this really done to for the black community? It hasn't done nearly as much as we think. It has created a lot of millionaires, though, right? But I think that overall, the damage is just enormous. And I think that the culture, there's something about that athlete rapper culture. Like a lot of times, if I meet a guy, if I meet the wrong guy who's like a former athlete or a rapper, and his mindset isn't right, or he isn't emotionally balanced, there's like a weird sort of almost like extreme narcissism that can really develop. Because I mean, think about it. For many years, people have kissed your butt. They've done whatever you told them to do. Every girl wanted you. You had plenty of money. People rolled out the red carpet for you. People excused you for everything. They would let you skip class, going all the way back to high school. And what this does, so I want you to imagine this though. So fast forward this. Let's go back and let's look at this conversation with Chad Ochocinco, Shannon Sharpe, and Gilbert Arenas, three extremely talented athletes, none of whom are married. All of them are at least 45 years old. Shannon's as old as 55. And all of them commenting on why this black woman, this educated black woman's not married. And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, well, I don't think any of you guys would actually be marriage material. I don't think any of them have ever been married. And a lot of that just really, I think, comes from the type of culture that you were brought along in. You were brought along in almost this oddly delusional world that creates the kind of man that's not even built to deal with the ups and downs of marriage. Like, let me tell you a little something about marriage, first of all, or just being a part of a family. It requires a lot of humility, right? And look at, and I want you to look at hip hop culture again, because I remember in my book, The Ten Commandments of Black Economic Power, I explain how culture and economics are connected. So look at hip hop culture. Give me a guess if you've noticed. If you listen to hip hop is all about, for many rappers, not all of them, but a lot of it is about being as arrogant as you can possibly be. Tell me if I'm lying. It's all about, like, literally, all you're doing is repeating to the world how you're the best, you're the greatest, you're amazing, you're extraordinary, you're just better than everybody, right? That's what it is. It's like this competition, like, no, I'm the king, I'm the boss, I'm the don, I'm the don, right? That's all. It is sort of this chest out hyper masculinity that's not even freaking normal, but really what you are is you are a WWE character. You're a cartoon character. But and you're trying to become the biggest character you can be because that's how you become famous. And because if you win, white people will show up to your concerts, you make tens of millions of dollars, and you get to say, "Look, mama, I made it." That, unfortunately, if you internalize that too much, can make you an absolutely impossible human being to deal with. And it take it from a guy, take it from somebody who knows celebrities. Take it from a guy who can explain to you why I don't even like answering the phone when celebrities call me, because some of them are just like, Lord, you're not even a human being. Okay, Kanye, so you're telling me that you're a god? You're not a god, dude. Shut up. It's stupid to me. How do you collaborate with a person who literally says, I think I'm God? I don't know what drug you're on. I don't get it. And here's the thing. Here's what I'm getting at. Pay attention, though, because this links back to everything we talk about when it comes to economics. I know y'all think I'm going into a whole different region. Some people do, but no, please trust me on this. So this hip hop style of black maleness, which is not in my mind indicative of the qualities that a human being needs to have in order to be collaborative and to be part of a community. What that does, that is so anti-family, it's anti-progress, it's anti-collaboration. Why? Well, because you and I and me and somebody else get together and we all decide we want to build something together, but everybody wants to be the alpha. Everybody wants to be King Kong consciousness. Everybody wants to be the boss. I want to be number one. I'm the most highly sought after one. Seriously, that's why I could not work with Umar, because I'm Umar Johnson. Years ago, 12 years ago, we tried to work together. I said, "You're King Kong. What? You're the most highly what? You're the most highly sought after." I'm a good scholar too, but I'm not gonna run around and tell you that I'm just better than you if I'm trying to work with you. I want you to be great too. I'm gonna tell you how great you are. I'm not gonna tell you how great I am. That's very weird to me. I don't understand that. That's insecurity to me. If you're great at something, the world should be telling you that you're great. You shouldn't be the one constantly in people's faces tell. I did I ever tell y'all, I don't reveal a lot from private conversations, but since we're having a private conversation with, me and about 5,000 people, I was on the phone with Kanye West, and he tells me just in the middle of the conversation, he says, "Well, I'm the most important person in the world next to Vladimir Putin and shit." And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with that information? Not only is it false, but it's stupid. What? Dude, what? And then I'm like, and then I start questioning myself, like, boys, why are you even on the phone with this man? He's clearly weird and he's clearly an idiot. Oh, you're on the phone with him because white people put him on TV and he's sold these ugly shoes and he's famous. But does that make him significant? And then that makes me question, like, why, and that makes me go back to my policy of saying, this is why we don't talk to people like this is why we don't get caught up in believing someone's important just because they're famous. Again, I reiterate this. This is what I truly believe to the core of my soul. The important people in the black community are not the ones you see on TV. They're not the rappers, not the athletes, not the entertainers. Some of them are good people. Some of them are great people. So I don't want to sound like I'm bashing an entire group, okay? I want to be clear about that. I am bashing a subgroup, but not an entire group. Because I told you how much admiration I have for D1, and D1's a rapper. He's right there with the best of them. Love him. Think he's amazing, right? But the important people in the community are the ones who kind of get it, who understand we got to do better. We have to do, when our families are falling apart, we are failing our children. When we can't, when we have not solved the problem on how a black man and a black woman can humble themselves enough to truly love each other, to protect them damn babies, because everybody want to be King Kong consciousness and everybody want to be the leader and I want to be the dominant, what all this stupid stuff that people, seriously, I like, for example, I hear men say, well, the women won't let us lead. Women won't let us lead. But I'm like, but you do understand at the same time, you have to prove yourself worthy of leadership. Did you spend time training and preparing to be the kind of leader that a woman would actually follow? Let's just be honest. Black women have been through hell like men have, and as a result, they've kind of muscled their way through some stuff and they've gotten all this education. They're the most educated group of people on the planet, and they make lots of money. And so maybe some of the rules have to be adjusted, right? So if she's trying her best, then maybe we can adjust a little bit, right? Like I don't know, like I saw a guy that got really mad because it was a scene with Wesley Snipes and Sanaa Lathan, and he bought tickets for her birthday to go to a play, and they were in the seventh row, and she wanted the front row, so she said, well, let me just get the better tickets, because she had more money, because he'd lost his job, and he gets mad, he's like, F your birthday, and I was like, what's wrong with taking help from your woman? Like, if your woman's doing well and she wants to help you, her having your back does not make you less of a man. It makes it easier on you. It's less stressful. You know, my wife is one of the most educated people I'll ever meet, and she makes money and she likes to help. So there's nothing that assaults my masculinity by saying, okay, well, all right, if you want to do it, go for it. You know? So I think generally, and again, but again, though, don't get me wrong. I think there's enough critique to go around. That's my point. There's enough grace that has to occur on both sides. But I think the biggest thing, really, going back to the cultural piece, is just simple humility. Like I think working with a group, whether you're talking about a family, an investment club, a company, or any project, is typically going to require you to accept the idea that the group is more important than what you want as an individual, right? So if you're a feminist, for example, extreme feminist, who believes that your happiness is more important than keeping the family together, then chances are you won't be able to keep a family together. Because a lot of times I found that me making my family happy, and I'm not just talking about my wife and my children, I'm talking about my parents and siblings, is that sometimes I might be mad at my sister or angry at my mother about something, but I'm going to temper my response in a way that it's going to make sure we maintain the relationship. Do you understand? And I don't see a lot of people speaking that way. I don't see a lot of that. And so circling back, let's go back to what I was talking about earlier with sports and athletes. You know, so if you have an athlete who was not grounded in anything spiritually or ethically that manages his morality and self-esteem and sense of balance so that he can have the humility to keep a family together, he's not going to be husband material. High emotional IQ. Thank you, Calvin. I think that's a great term to use. If I've been spoiled my whole life, and I truly believe that I must always be in the front, I must always get all the attention, I must always do whatever I want, and I can be dismissive of the needs of the people around me, then I'm going to be absolutely a horrible person to collaborate with. It's going to mean the people around me are typically just going to be people who simply live under whatever set of rules that I create. So I'm going to make everybody else miserable so they can just have the chance to be around me. And the people that can't tolerate that are going to walk away. So good people will leave my life because I insist on kind of having things my way all the time. So that narcissistic personality disorder, which actually, by the way, the formal diagnosis of narcissism is actually quite rare, believe it or not. My wife actually was telling me that the word narcissist is used more than it should be. But there are people that have tendencies, narcissistic tendencies. And I think that hip hop breeds narcissism, and hip hop culture spills over, excuse me, into other areas of black male life in many cases. So this extreme narcissism is something that you see all the time. So I want you to think about that every time you see somebody just they may not even be a rapper, but they may be an athlete or maybe even a public speaker. Again, when I see some of the scholars, sometimes the scholars act like rappers, or I have scholars that want to beef with me like I'm a rapper, and I'm like, why are we starting to beef? Like, aren't we supposed to have a debate? Like, I don't understand this. This doesn't make any sense. And I think it's very immature. I think it's immature, and that immaturity not only does it make the black male the laughing stock of America, I don't think that the world really respects black men. Like, if you really ask them truly, honestly, like, what do you really think about black males? And it'll be some white person who's really scared to say something mean, and they'll be like, well, they don't seem to really be very disciplined, and they don't really stick to things, and they don't really seem to want to take care of their kids. And that's unfortunate, because the reality is that there are really a lot of people who think that way, you know, and it's kind of something that if we don't sort of honestly address that, we're gonna always struggle and we're gonna always fail, right? So go just sort of going full circle on this whole conversation about culture and just what sports and all that kind of does if it's not balanced. I'm gonna use this example. There's a show called Quarterback. Has anybody ever seen the show Quarterback? On Netflix, and it's about three quarterbacks in the NFL, and it takes you week by week and shows them preparing for their games and takes you all through the season. One quarterback is Patrick Mahomes, who's half white, half black. He has a white wife. And then the other one is Kirk Cousins, who plays for the Minnesota Vikings. The third one was Marcus Marietta or something like that. He wasn't very good, to be honest with you, but the other two quarterbacks are better in my opinion. What I found really interesting is that even though these guys were extraordinarily great athletes, they also, for a very young age, I think they're all in their either early 30s or late 20s. I think Patrick Mahomes is, I don't even know if he's hit 30 yet, but he's got a $400 million contract, and he actually, you know, just has like a wife and a child, and he comes home to his wife and his kid every day. Same thing with Kirk Cousins, right? And I thought that was really interesting, because I know a lot of men who would call those guys simps. They would call them simps because, you know, because they submit to their spouses, they submit to their family. They're not out at the strip club throwing money in, you know, putting money in stripper thongs and pouring out liquor bottles and trying to have five girlfriends at once. And I think that there's a lot of that that does happen in our culture. And I don't think that this is the reflective of the very best of us. And if you ask, well, where does that come from? I think it comes from media. I think it comes from hip hop, not all hip hop, just the toxic side, right? In fact, remember I talked to you all about that show on BET called Blew the Bag. And on that show, Blew the Bag, the guy when they he won the lottery, and he won a whole lot of money, like $50,000, $100,000. And they said, well, you know, well, how did you lose all that money so fast? He said, man, I went out and I bought out the whole top floor of a hotel. He said, I ordered a bunch of strippers and a bunch of liquor, and all the money, and eventually all the money was gone. And so what culture do you think he was imitating? He was imitating the rapper culture, right? This sort of false, hyper-masculine, highly irresponsible, very immature, very childish, outlandish, extreme behavior, and very wasteful behavior. That's not how a man behaves, in my view, especially not a man who wants to create a healthy community around him, right? Or a man who wants to live a long, healthy life, or a man who wants to be in a space where he's stable and secure. And I do also believe, though, that the men who do behave this way, I believe even they don't want to be like that. They just don't know any different. They weren't really trained on what masculinity, what manhood looks like. And this is one of the reasons why the missing father in the black household has been so impactful economically on the black community. A lot of these boys, when, you know, when they grow up, they're like, why would I get married? Why would I take responsibility for a family when I could just do fun stuff all day? Like, who would want to do work, you know, when you could just be doing fun stuff if there's no purpose behind the work? You know, seriously, I'm a married man, and let me just tell you, I'm gonna tell you the truth. Being married and taking care of kids is not as much fun as sitting around, you know, having pleasure all day. It's not. It's not. So you say, well, why would you do that, boys? Why would you choose to do that when you could be just having fun? Well, for the same reason that when I eat food, I sat down, I ate a salad for lunch. I could have been eating ice cream. Well, why did I eat ice cream? Well, because if I eat ice cream all day, every day, I'm going to be 400 pounds and I'm going to die from diabetes or a heart attack. So I'm thinking about the long-term effects of this behavior and not just the short-term stuff. So when you look at, for example, a guy like a rapper DMX, who his whole life, I remember when I was 28 years old, and this was before I got to know Dame Dash. I got to know Dame Dash extremely well, and but I didn't know Dame at the time. And I saw Dame on this documentary with him and Jay-Z and DMX, and they were all on tour together. And I was 28 years old. I was in graduate school, so I'm nobody's catch. None of the girls liked me or anything. I didn't even meet girls because I was sitting at home studying all the time. And I was watching these rappers living this dream life on the road, and they interviewed DMX, and they said, so what do you do on tour? Why are you out here on tour, DMX? What you been up to? He said, nothing, just smoke all day, fuck all night. You know how DMX talks, right? So basically, I smoke weed all day, or I smoke something all day, and then I have sex all night, right? So what that is constant pleasure-seeking behavior, which I believe is more likely to occur amongst traumatized people, because traumatized people are in pain, so they can end up self-medicating. And then when there's no boundaries, that's when you form these various addictions, right? And so for men, the four vices and addictions that can destroy men are typically sex, drugs, alcohol, or gambling, if they are not held in moderation. So there has to be some sense of purpose that maintains boundaries on the man's behavior. There has to be some sense of purpose where the man says, okay, I've done a little bit of partying. Now it's time for me to go back to work. There has to be some sense of purpose when a man says, yeah, I could have three women at one time, but ooh, I need to focus on one because I got other stuff to do, right? There has to be some sense of purpose when a man says, yeah, I could eat more fried chicken and ice cream, but I gotta watch my weight and I want to watch my health, right? There has to be some sense of purpose, right? And what purpose and balance. And so DMX, when I heard this at 28, I remember thinking, that does not sound healthy. This is not going to end well for this man. This man is, how are you going to live long if that's all you do all day? And I didn't know what he was smoking. I thought it was just marijuana. He was smoking cocaine. So you go for fast forward 20 something years later, DMX is 40 something year old man. He's got, the product of all that sex, all these kids just splattered everywhere. Half of them don't know him or like him that much. He had the whole blow up with his son on with Ayanna Van Zandt show. The drug addiction has clearly shown signs. He's now physically weak and, mentally unstable. And he's also financially devastated, right? So for the most part, what should have been a $10 billion legacy, right? DMX easily was a $5 to $10 billion economic asset. He probably would have been bigger than Tupac Shakur, in my opinion, because I love Tupac. I like DMX more than I like Tupac. I like Jay-Z, but I like DMX more than I like Jay-Z. He was gonna be bigger the same year. He sold more albums than Jay-Z. But instead of that, what did you get? Well, you get a sad man who dies, at a very early age with a really, really damaged legacy that could have been so much more. So what I want you to sort of process is not just, and it's not just about the money. It's about the money, and it's also about all the things that are more valuable than money, all the things that money cannot buy. So what happens if instead of us encouraging or allowing white folks to convince us to embrace a culture that leads to that level of waste and self-destruction, what if we take a conscious effort to make sure that we manage our boys, that we manage the psyches of our boys? What if we just said, we're going to make sure our boys go through a rite of passage so they really learn how to be men in this world, so they're not running around here like these 40-year-old teenagers doing things that children do. I look online and I see 38-year-old men getting into violent hip hop beefs and literally doing things that teenagers do, right? Because all you know how to do is be young. All you know how to do is be a kid. You never learn how to become a senior member of the community. You never learn how to become an elder. You never learn how to become the OG. All you know how to be is the young thug, and eventually you become the old thug. All Diddy knew was how to be a 25-year-old who could dance. That's all he knew how to do. And that's what he was for 30 years. He was Peter Pan. He was the dancing 25-year-old, except he was 35, 45, and now he's in his 50s. Now he's this old man who's probably getting surgery and doing whatever he can do. I don't know if he's getting surgery or not, but he's trying to stay young because that's all he can do is hold on to 1997. right? But what's Diddy supposed to be? Well, he's not supposed to be what he is now, right? But this is really what I refer to as almost like a Peter Pan-ish kind of complex that gets created in hip hop and sports, because those are areas where the young tend to thrive. And this also, pay attention, what this does to the younger males in your community who are supposed to be the leaders and the industrialists, the big business owners. They're supposed to be the men that are supposed to elevate the community, right? Well, the younger men are looking up to these guys and learning absolutely nothing. Learning absolutely nothing. So when you have, say, a young Boyce Watkins that comes along, and I'm not a rapper, I'm not an athlete, I just want to be a finance professor, I'm looking at these older men and saying, like, I have nothing to look up to. And that was my challenge when I was younger. I had a really hard time finding strong black men who had not either sold out, broken down, or stayed little children. And you know, the only thing that saved me was I was lucky enough to be adopted by a man who just taught me what a man is supposed to do. And what I learned from him was I learned about things like, you know, being a patient father and loving a woman for 50 years. My parents are about to have their 50th wedding anniversary this year. 50 years. And I watched the whole 50 years. And believe me, if my mama had been an extreme feminist, they would have divorced in 1978. If my daddy had been like some of these arrogant goofball Negroes that I see on the internet, they would have divorced in 1979. Because he had a lot of things he could have been doing. There was a lot of women to sleep with, a lot of liquor that could have been drank, a lot of weed that could have been smoked, instead of him coming home every day and taking care of a wife and two kids at the age of 25. You know, but this is what I had a chance to see, and this was a reminder of the fact that there are more important things than just pleasure seeking, but also the benefits that come to others when real men show up and really present themselves as what they're supposed to be. I don't think God meant for you as a black man. I'm gonna finish on this point. I know I'm going in a little bit on some topics, and I apologize if this was too much for some people, but I don't think God meant for the black man to just be a rapper. God did not mean for black men to be a bunch of Diddy's and a bunch of DMX's. I'm sorry, I don't think that's what our purpose is. God did not mean for you to be a bunch of Ocho Cinco's and Gilbert Arenas's, or to even look up to that, to even admire. There's not much to admire there. I think God meant for us to be fathers, leaders, husbands, winners, thinkers, achievers, hard workers. I really feel that men, I think that we are meant to be tent poles. You know, like you know, and healers. There we go, like healers. We can do all these things, right? Like, let me tell you about a manhood moment I had yesterday that I'm so proud of. I feel so good about this. I'm proud of it, and I feel good about it. Yesterday, my wife engaged in the horrifically dangerous task of asking me to cook dinner for the family. Now, if you don't know, I can't cook my way out of a paper bag. I can't boil water. If I make you a grilled cheese sandwich, you might die that day. I'm a I'm a terrible cook. So, but she's like, boy, we need you to make dinner. I'm like, I don't cook. Can't we do Uber Eats? No, boys, I don't want to eat street food. Come on, Alicia. Like, that was the conversation. Like, I got stuff that, boys, we need you to cook. She's like, it's easy, boys. She gets these like healthy meals, and they send all the ingredients in a bag, and they have these instructions. She's like, boys, even a little kid can understand the instructions. I said, I can't cook. So here's what happens, right? So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go cook. This is how I really feel. So I go in the kitchen, I start reading the instructions, and I start getting frustrated immediately. And I get triggered. When I start getting frustrated with something, I don't want to keep doing it. I start sweating, and I'm looking at the, you know, and it's like, okay, so grab a cutting board. I'm like, I don't know where the cutting board is. I don't know where anything is in the kitchen. And then it's like, and do the blah, 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 and baste the blah. I'm like, what are you talking about baste it? I don't know, right? So I'm mad. I'm really frustrated within 2 minutes. So our 13-year-old comes in the kitchen, Tay-Tay, Taylor, I call it Tay-Tay or Tater, that's her nickname. She comes in and she sees that I'm struggling trying to figure out how to cook. So she starts to help me. And she's like, no, here's the cutting board. Here's what it means. No, don't put the tomato. No, you put the tomatoes in the cheese. You're not supposed to do. I'm like, well, that's what the instructions said, right? So she's helping me do this, right? So as we're sitting here, and I'm like, okay, boys, let's just get through this. You can do this. Come on. So we start making this chicken, and we make this little pesto thing, and we have to put this stuff inside the chicken. And I'm trying to figure out, like, I've never touched raw chicken before. I'm thinking, am I going to get salmonella? But, you know, and I'm doing this, but we're talking, right? So me and my daughter start talking. And she starts telling me, I'm like, so how's school? And she's telling me about school and her friends and everything that's going on. And then she starts telling me about dance class and her favorite dance group down in Australia. And she's like, here's the video. We start playing their video on the front. So the whole time we're making dinner and we're having this awesome, like, father-daughter moment. And I'm like, oh, wow, we're having like one of those moments that you could capture in a Hallmark movie. Like, we're making dinner together. And I'm learning about her life, and I'm learning things that I never would have learned if I'd stayed in my comfort zone, right? If I'd sat in my office and did what I always do, which is I let the girls take care of dinner and then I just show up and eat, like, I never would have learned all these things about her. And so she's feeling good. She's feeling connected because she's telling me about everything. And I'm happy because I'm like, good. You know, because, you know, with kids, sometimes it's hard to get them to let it all out. And she's like, and then blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, really? What? No way. No, she didn't. Did she? She didn't even learn the routine right. You know, like, we're going through all this. And I felt so good when that was done. And you know what I did? I had to humble myself. I went to my wife and I said, thank you for forcing me out of my comfort zone. Thank you for forcing me to do something that I never would have agreed to do on my own. And that was in that moment, that was one of the greatest blessings of being married. It's like that pressure to kind of do some stuff that you might not normally do. And also it does take a decision within you to be willing to receive that, right? Because I could have kept resisting. I could have just said, I'm not making dinner and that's it. And I'm the man of the house and what I say goes. And woman, I'm here to lead it. And don't be telling me what to do. I could have done that. But then I was like, you know what, boys, maybe she knows something you don't know. Maybe there's something, a perspective here that you need to understand. And so I just submitted to it. I submitted, right? And I'm so glad that I did it, you know? So I would just say to you, it reminds me of a couple of things. Number one, generally in life, I promise you that all your growth and all your wildest dreams, they lie right outside your comfort zone. Wherever your little comfort zone is, where you stay and you're nice and you feel nice and safe and you don't want to leave that spot, whatever you want, that money, that success, that great relationship, whatever it is you're looking for, it's right over that fence that you can't jump because you're too scared or it's just so uncomfortable and unfamiliar and you're worried about what's going to happen. And then also, yeah, I really learned a lot about being a man and being a father that day. I just hope everybody gets blessed enough to have an experience like that, you know? So I'm done for today. I hope that this conversation was beneficial to you. And I want to make this final point too, because, you know, remember, this is financial consciousness training that we do every day. And by the way, if you want to get on the text list to get a notification or get an invitation, just text the word morning to 87948. Text morning to 87948, and you'll be on the list. This all connects to economics because relationships and economics are very important. They connect to each other. If you do one wrong, it's hard to do the other. The reason I spent so much time talking about culture and maleness and everything else is because a sloppy culture will lead to sloppy outcomes when it comes to money, right? Just think about that every time you see a rapper at the club throwing money in the stripper thong, you know, instead of pouring his generational wealth into a legacy, a trust, or a business, he's pouring into something silly and stupid. So really that sort of awareness is critically important. And one thing you'll notice is that cultures that tend to prosper financially tend to be cultures that breed elements of discipline and humility, as well as just awareness that can open that door for possibility, right? So wealth tends to be created through stable families, intelligent men and women, who are making intelligent decisions, thinking long term, and most importantly, really caring about and protecting the children. So that's my two cents for today. I'm going to come back with something completely different tomorrow. And I want to say thank you all for listening. And so if you want to join, so tonight D1 and I are going to do that private conversation where you can pick his brain about how he was able to accomplish so much in business without selling out or anything like that. Feel free to join us there. There's the link. And also, if you get on the text list, text the word morning to 87948. I'll send you a link to join D1 and I. And then also, if you guys want a copy of Dr. Claude Anderson's book, Powernomics, here's a link to that. But actually, you know what? I don't have the link right here. But if you go to drboycebooks.com, we do have copies of Powernomics there. Feel free to go take a look at that. And then last but not least, I'm going to share something here with you. On the $5 a day plan. Some of you asked about that. You can either go to blackwealthmasterplan.com or there's the link right there. And the $5 a day plan is something that we offer in the Black Business School to help you on your journey to investing. It's very easy to do and it'll help you succeed. So take care, guys. Have a good day. And I will see you all tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Take care. Bye-bye.